Your March Madness fix.
Puck, baseline, up for the shot, dive, off the glass, the game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over. Michigan has won a national championship.
Got a feeling.
Holy mackerel, holy mackerel.
Tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot.
Yes!
There's the shot by Tate Jordan. Wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three.
He does!
Smart takes the shot.
Oh, Indiana wins the championship.
So now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court. It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win.
Gone!
Oh!
Nice, Drew did it. Valpo has won the game. A miracle.
One shining moment.
Wittenberg. Oh, it's a long way.
Pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
Yes!
Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gives it to Katie Douglas. Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
In terms of the first four out, this is an alphabetical order. Baylor, Notre Dame, St. Mary's, and USC. Those are the first four left out in alphabetical order. John, Notre Dame, they missed Bonzi Colson for 2 months. That was the big conversation. Your thoughts on a team that could have been good but missed their best player for a long time?
Well, you can't put people in the tournament because they could have been good, first of all. It's an unfortunate thing to happen to Notre Dame because Bonzi is such a tremendous ball player. But there are other teams that aren't as well known as Notre Dame who had players that are injured that impacted their season. So I understand exactly what was done. Certainly because you know Notre Dame's tradition, you know how disappointing it is to lose a key player, but I think it's the right decision.
Westwood One's coverage of the NCAA tournament selection yesterday here on WSBT Radio. The last voice you heard was former Georgetown head coach John Thompson offering his thoughts on why he felt like Notre Dame should not be in the field of 68. The Irish miss out on the tournament by one spot. But the big question is, Syracuse in, Notre Dame out. It's a bit of a head-scratcher, so we did a little digging today, and we'll try to offer some sort of explanation from the committee standpoint to why they would pick Syracuse over Notre Dame. We welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, and your home for the NCAA tournament. We will have first four coverage starting on Wednesday, and then wall-to-wall coverage Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday right here on 96.1 WSBT. We'll get the schedule from Westwood One probably tomorrow, and we can pass along the games that you can hear on WSBT Radio Thursday and Friday. Of course, they go to the big game that's developing, but there is a foundation of games they will start with that you'll hear on WSBT Radio. So we're going to talk a lot about Notre Dame missing out on the tournament. Also, we're going to take a look at the South bracket of the NCAA tournament, and that is the part of the bracket that features the number one overall seed, the Virginia Cavaliers. Arizona is there, a grumpy John Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats in that part of the draw. Cincinnati is there, and a team that I kind of like as a Cinderella Sweet 16 team. One of those double-digit teams. We'll talk about who that is coming up in just a little bit. And I'm going to put Eric to the test in our My 5 question of the day. If he was the guy that decided the teams that made the NCAA tournament, what would be the top five elements of resumes that you would look at the most to make that decision? So I'm very interested to hear if Eric's list is a little different than the selection committee. And I think the committee frustrated a lot of people, and I'll get to why coming up in just a second. Also, next hour, An hour from right now, Tom Noy, the Fighting Irish basketball insider for the South Bend Tribune, league columnist, will offer his thoughts on Notre Dame missing out on the tournament and the Irish preparing for the NIT tomorrow night at 9 o'clock against Hampton. You can hear the game on WSBT Radio, and it's $10 general admission to get into the game tomorrow night. So if you want to see the Irish play, if you want to sit lower down in the bowl than maybe you ever have, here's your chance. It is the NIT, but it is a chance to support this senior class and watch Notre Dame basketball up close and personal tomorrow night at 9 o'clock with $10 general admission. We've got Rapid Fire coming up next hour as well. Eric, good to see you.
Same here.
So let's lay it all out. Notre Dame ended up being team number 69, the last team not in the NCAA tournament. As we found out later, they started the day in the field. But when Davidson upset regular season champion Rhode Island to win the Atlantic 10 title, Davidson, who would not have made the tournament, got the automatic berth in the A-10, and that sent Rhode Island into the at-large pool. And that particular game knocked Notre Dame out of the field of 68. So the three teams that come to mind that I'm sure a lot of Irish fans are scratching their head, well, why did these teams get in over my team? Oklahoma and Arizona State struggled down the stretch. They both picked up at-large berths. They had more quadrant wins. They had bagged more quality wins early in the year. Both struggled down the stretch. And as we found out, Eric, from the committee, this committee didn't care when the wins took place. It's about bagging quality victories at some point in your season. And Arizona State and Oklahoma won some really, really good games early on in the year, but then they were not very good down the stretch. Oklahoma 2-8. Arizona State finished 9th in the Pac-12 and got knocked out in the first round of the conference tournament. They're in. I will say this, Eric, I don't mind the committee saying it's the whole body of work, it doesn't matter when the wins take place. But I just feel like from year to year, the target moves. The reason moves. We've heard before how you finish is important. Now it seems like that how you finish is not important. If you pick up 5 quadrant one wins in November and December and you don't have any more.
What is a quadrant one win?
It is a specific group of teams that fit a formula or criteria, and they break it into quadrants. So if that team is in your quadrant and you beat them, you get the benefit of the doubt. It's like the RPI top 25. You know, Notre Dame was 1-7 in that category, but it's just a little different. And Notre Dame had 2 wins in the quadrant.
It sounds like something from Star Trek that Captain Kirk would say to Lieutenant O'Hara.
That's right. Well, anyway, I just feel like the explanation changes from year to year. So now we know, going into next year, how you finish doesn't matter, right? I mean, Oklahoma and Arizona State are the poster child.
Yeah,
I thought so, too. Apparently not anymore. So if you look at the quadrant wins, I can see how Oklahoma and Arizona State got in ahead of Notre Dame. If it doesn't matter in their eyes, if it doesn't matter when the wins take place, they had some more impressive victories. Let's just leave it at that because we got to get to Syracuse. This is really the head scratcher. Syracuse was the last team in the field. So Syracuse was 68, Notre Dame was 69. The Irish beat Syracuse at the Carrier Dome in January, 51-49. No Bonzi Colson, no Matt Farrell. They both ended up 8-10 in the ACC. So how did Syracuse get in ahead of Notre Dame? Well, the committee today came out with a little bit of an explanation on how they split hairs among the bubble teams. So they listed 3 criteria, Eric, and then we'll go back and offer some more detail. But they mentioned strength of schedule, record versus NCAA teams, and record away from home. That's what they listed for an example of how you try to decide between Syracuse and Notre Dame. So here's what we came up with. Strength of schedule, Syracuse 17, Notre Dame 44. 44 is still a really good number. Record versus NCAA team, Syracuse 5-9, Notre Dame 5-10. Very similar. Record away from home, Syracuse 6-8, Notre Dame 9-9. Again, they beat Syracuse head-to-head on the road without Colson and Farrell. So let's just dig a little deeper. What else could have been on the committee's mind to take Syracuse over the Irish? As I mentioned, the quadrant one win, Syracuse had 4, Notre Dame had 2. We know Notre Dame went 2-8 in quadrant one. I do not know the loss total of Syracuse, but they won 4, 2 more than the Irish. RPI, apparently, which was important again. That's my perception. Syracuse 45. I use CBS Sports for their numbers. They had Notre Dame at 70. So that's a bit of a difference. And by the way, USC was 34 in the RPI, didn't get in. It is the lowest RPI number not to get into the NCAA tournament. Non-conference strength of schedule. What does the committee always say? Go play somebody. And if you can, go play them on the road. Non-conference strength of schedule, Eric. Syracuse 14, Notre Dame 178. And finally, this note was mentioned in an article about this whole conversation. And I don't know if the committee even thought about this, talked about this. But they want you to play somebody. But a journalist pointed out games versus the bottom 100 RPI teams. Notre Dame played 3 games against the bottom 100, Syracuse none. So that's probably a big reason why Notre Dame fell to 178 were those 3 bottom 100 RPI numbers. Because they played some really good teams.
Right.
I think like we've talked about in the past with Notre Dame, they'll play some really good ones, and then they'll play some really lower ones, and maybe there needs to be a couple of more in the middle to balance it out.
Right. I've noticed that in some of their past schedules when you look at, you know, a KenPom or a Sagarin rating, and you see some of the teams Notre Dame has played like in the bottom 20 teams. I mean, they're just god awful, and you know, that hurts. But I think as a committee member, you kind of have to sift through that, too. That when I look at Syracuse's non-conference schedule, I can't believe that there's that big of a difference. Now, they did play Kansas, but they lost to Kansas by double digits. And you look at the rest of them, and, you know, Buffalo certainly, boys, they lost to St. They played St. Bonaventure and lost to them. I mean, they didn't beat the best.
Agreed.
Best win in the non-conference would have been Buffalo, I guess, 81-74 at home.
As on the selection committee, they were known as the Buffalo Bills when their name was called.
Yeah.
Oops. Well, I'll say this. Again, I don't necessarily agree with the committee, but I understand why Oklahoma and Arizona State got in before Notre Dame. I get the numbers, how they got to that conclusion. I struggle with Syracuse. I'm trying to come into this as a non-Notre Dame fan. I'm trying to be non-biased, and I'm trying to get into the committee's head what separated the two teams. Because it sure seems like everything we read, Eric, the bottom line, outside of non-conference strength of schedule, the numbers are pretty close. There's not a big difference. Now, non-conference strengths of schedule is a huge difference, and the RPI for Notre Dame at 70, if they factored that in, that might have been something that hurt them. But you beat them head-to-head on their floor without Notre Dame's 2 best players. And, Eric, if the two teams are close, which I think, obviously, if they're 68 and 69 in the ranking, they're very, very close. I'm really shocked the committee didn't give Notre Dame the benefit of the doubt when they did not have 2 of their star players for a good chunk of the season, especially Colson missing 15 games. I'll follow that up by saying this, and this will be a question to you. And I'm not sure if you agree with what I just said there.
Okay.
But the only thing I can think of, did Notre Dame lose the benefit of the doubt with Colson coming back from 2 standpoints? Number one, and this is something we have preached to our listeners for how many weeks, that if this happened, this could be one of the reasons why. Losing to Ball State at home with a healthy team and losing on a neutral floor to Indiana with a healthy team. That hurts their cause. But I wonder more than anything else, Eric, when Colson came back, the Virginia game, they looked really, really good. They lost, but they looked good.
Yeah.
But in the ACC tournament, how do you judge them? I would say they did not play as well in the ACC tournament as the Virginia game. The second half of Pittsburgh was a struggle. They had 4 field goals. The first half of Virginia Tech, they had 21 points. They had a heck of a comeback to win the game. We can't leave that out.
Right.
But then against Duke, it was 3 games in 3 days. I think we have to point that out. That's not an excuse. But as the game went on, after being down 4 at halftime, the game became a little less competitive as the game went on. My question is, throwing aside the Ball State-Indiana conversation, we've mentioned that, and I think it's a factor, Do you think if Notre Dame would have looked a little better consistently in the ACC tournament, that might have been the difference? Did they play well enough there to give the committee a reason to think about Colson and Notre Dame healthy at that point?
I would agree with you on that point. And one thing we should point out, too, if either Nevada or Rhode Island go ahead and win their tournament like they were favored to do, then we're not even having this conversation. Yes. They're playing in Dayton in a play-in or first four game, I guess they call those. And I'm glad that your lips sync up to your speech today. That was distracting in the show yesterday. Selection.
TBS just needs to hand the baton back to CBS. Yeah,
and I'm glad we don't have that studio audience here either. That was weird.
For today, increasing clouds.
I do. I think had, let's say, Notre Dame loses to Duke by 18, and then Duke goes and wins the ACC tournament, I think even that would have helped Notre Dame in that very thin line in getting in over Syracuse. You know, you say, wow, you know, Duke looks like a number one seed right now, and look at what they did in the ACC after they got done with Notre Dame, but they lost in the semis their very next game. So I think that definitely, so you didn't have a big body of work to judge Bonzi, and two of the games were against Pittsburgh, and one of them they didn't play well. So I think that made it a harder sell, and I realize the head-to-head thing, but you have to look at the whole resume. There are teams that, you know, okay, Ball State could say, hey, we beat Notre Dame head-to-head, why aren't we in? You know, or Indiana could say the same thing.
I'm looking at it more of a tiebreaker with these two teams being so close, 68 and 69.
I do. I could see that. And when I look at Syracuse's schedule game by game, I don't see anything in there where I say, well, here's the reason, Darren. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't look like they got, you know, it didn't look like they got a really difficult ACC schedule. You know, when you look at who they played, they had doubles with Pitt. You know, that was a team that they doubled up with during the regular season, not even during the tournament. Boston College was another team they doubled with, and they split with them. So I don't know. It's odd. The whole Bonzi factor. I would have put Notre Dame in over Syracuse. But I would have put USC in over Arizona State. That one was weird, too, because Arizona State is such a strange resume. They beat two number one seeds, and yet they finished 8-10 in a conference that only got three bids, right? And two of those are play-in games. Arizona State and UCLA are play-ins, and then Arizona is the third team. And USC finished second in the conference, four full games ahead of Arizona State, and finished second in the tournament. I thought that was kind of bizarre.
What's more fascinating is listening to Jerry Palm, the bracketologist for CBS Sports. He mentioned last night that in January, two of the number one seeds were Oklahoma and Arizona State. That shows you how good their resume was the first 2 months.
Right.
So that shows the strength of what they did early. And again, in the committee's eyes, it doesn't matter when you win the games. As long as you win them, they're not going to punish you for ending the season poorly like those two teams unfortunately did.
See, and that's where I have a little bit of difficulty with it. It's hard because you it's difficult to play a non-conference game in the middle of your conference season and just break away and do that. So you have to weigh those. That's when you have non-conference games. That's when you have big games. Darren, let's face it, November and December, different coaches have different philosophies about those games and how important they are. Some coaches are trying to put their teams together. Some already have their team together. So if you played that game in March, it's a completely different game than if you played in November. So I don't like the equal weighing of games in November and December. I think they're important, but I tamp them down a little bit. Well, when we get to the My Five, I think how you're playing at the end of the season is indicative. I think it should be a factor in this.
Eric, I think the one thing that might be flawed in what you're saying is, and I like your idea, but how does that formulate into all these analytics that the committee uses. You can't have a formula to tell the computer, well, this team's just kind of trying to figure themselves out right now in December.
Well, that's why you have a committee instead of letting the KenPom and Sagarin pick
well,
it
I
for
agree.
You.
I agree.
Yeah, otherwise, just let those computers pick it, and there's your field. I think that's why we have a committee in football now, because the BCS, combining the polls and the computers, where the computer couldn't factor in Clemson's quarterback was missing in that game that they lost.
I'll tell you what, let's do this. Either tomorrow or Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to lay out for our listeners and you how the NCAA hockey tournament figures out the best teams to get into the tournament.
Okay.
And I'm going to get your opinion to see whether it would work in college basketball.
Right.
Because there are three elements that compare all the teams. So right. When you compare St. Cloud State to Notre Dame, there are three things that are analyzed and compared. And if St. Cloud State has the advantage over Notre Dame, they get a point, basically. Right. So I'm going to lay that out. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow or Wednesday. And I'll ask you and our listeners if that's something that could be done in college basketball. Now, to be honest, when I first started getting into college hockey, I thought this whole pairwise thing was nuts. And there's still a part of me that thinks it's a little nuts.
Right.
But after yesterday, I've kind of turned the corner that it basically comes down to the analytics in college hockey. The only way the humans get involved is adjusting the bracket to help attendance or to avoid a conference repeat in the conference semifinals, the Sweet 16 round. Otherwise, Eric, it comes down to three elements, which I'll develop when we have that segment.
Well, it would eliminate then Bonzi missing 15 games. The computers wouldn't know that Bonzi missed those 15 games.
Right.
I'm not pounding my hand on the table saying this is just a grave injustice, because I think there are a lot of teams. I thought Middle Tennessee State had a case, even though they didn't get in. They tried to play people out of their conference. They didn't win those games, but they sure gave it a try.
Did you hear the story that St. Mary's reportedly turned down opportunities to play Rhode Island and Creighton? Those two teams wanted to play St. Mary's, and St. Mary's said no. And you look at their non-conference schedule, you see why they didn't make the tournament. Even though they beat Gonzaga, they didn't beat anybody else.
Right.
And shame on them for turning down those opportunities.
And that's what, you know, that's the thing. You can't always get Power 5 teams to play you, but you can get other really good conference teams to play you that are in the same boat you are, and I didn't see St. Mary's doing that.
Remember ESPN used to put together that little mid-major tournament in February?
Yeah,
where they would have
Racket Busters.
Racket Busters, you're exactly right. I guess that went away.
It did, and I like that.
Well, here's one more soundbite in this segment, and this goes back to Friday's show. And on Friday, before, of course, the brackets came out on Sunday, I talked to ESPN college basketball analyst Seth Greenberg about where Notre Dame stands in his eyes. How do you judge Bonzi Colson? Those type of storylines. And here was his answer.
Yeah, that's really hard on me because I absolutely love Mike Bray. I'm a huge, huge Bonzi Colson fan. Coached against his dad and knew his dad when he was assistant coach. I just think it would be hard for them to be in the tournament. And yet, I know they could win a game. I know they could win two games. But you've also got to be fair to everyone else in the field. Being fair to everyone else in the field, you can't evaluate them differently than everyone else. You know, the loss to Indiana, the loss to Ball State hurt. There's no doubt about it. You know, you have to look at their total body of work and take into consideration, obviously, the injuries. And I think when you do that, unless you look at everyone's injuries and everyone who played without players all season long, it just wouldn't be fair. And it kills me to say that because I love what Mike does. No one could have gotten this team to this point. Bonzi is incredibly, just a tremendous ambassador for college basketball. But I think it's going to be difficult.
And Seth turned out to be right, unfortunately, as Notre Dame out of the field. They are the top seed in that initial tournament, the three initial tournament, and they'll take on Hampton tomorrow at 9 o'clock here on 96.1 WSBT.
They are 22-point favorites. They're the largest favorite in an NIT first-round game, which is interesting. I wonder if Hampton Inn will sponsor the Hampton team.
Speaking of sponsoring, I think we had a first at Notre Dame on Saturday.
What was that?
Being a part of the Big Ten Conference, and we were hosting the Big Ten Conference semifinal hockey matchup, there were advertisements on the boards.
Interesting.
Because you know there are no advertisements in any Notre Dame venue. That's a rule they have. And we were talking about this. It had to be the first time that's ever happened, unless back in the day they used to do it. But just in my time here and your time here, I don't think you've ever seen it.
Mm-mm.
So that was kind of unique. When I looked at it, I had to stare and take a dump. Like, what? There's advertisement on the boards? That looked very, very strange. All right, when we come back, what did Mike Bray have to say about all this, including not getting in, and how Syracuse got in ahead of his team, and will his team be interested in playing in the NIT? Mike will answer those questions coming up in a moment. We'll get the South Bend Tribune's Tom Noyes' perspective on this story in about 40 minutes. More Irish basketball conversation to come as we continue on this Monday. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Over the Penn State line, left side, goes wide, leaves it for Ogilvy. He chips it now for Malmquist. He goes behind the net, and then he's pickpocketed by Mullery. Malmquist takes it away again for Jenkins. Bottom of the right circle, take a shot, see, rebound, they score! They score! Jenkins scores! 30 seconds left! Jenkins scores! Notre Dame, 3-2! 30 seconds away from a spot in the Big Ten Tournament Championship game! Pandemonium! At Lefty Smith Rink.
And it was loud, as you could hear right there. This has become a nice little hockey town. I tell you what, I got to admit, 5-6 years ago, little things that happened at a game people did not react to, that they now react to, and knowing what's at stake, it was pretty awesome to be in that building Saturday night as Notre Dame took down Penn State 3-2. Jack Jenkins scored with 30-plus seconds left in regulation to send Notre Dame to the Big Ten Tournament Championship game, where they will take on the Ohio State University, who beat Michigan with a goal 32 seconds into overtime. So this is really cool. Two teams that probably will be number one seeds in the NCAA hockey tournament will meet for the Big Ten Tournament Championship Saturday night at 8 o'clock. You can hear the game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. So Buckeyes and Irish for the Big Ten title, and it will be the fifth consecutive year that a different team will have won the Big Ten Tournament title. This will be the fifth different champion, so there has not been a repeat champion so far in the short history of the Big Ten Conference. So I'm not sure about ticket availability for Saturday, but if you want to check it out, we'd love to have you at Lefty Smith Rink, a chance to grab another ring and a banner by taking home the Big Ten Tournament title. I'm not sure if they do it like the ACC. Are you just the Big Ten champion? Because, you know, the ACC, if you win the tournament championship, we found out it's just the ACC championship. So we'll have to find that out. Can we get Delaney on the phone? We have some Madison Square Garden things to square away to. If the Big Ten teams don't play well in the NCAA, fair or not, do you think his email box might be a little full? These teams sitting out for a week?
Whew. Yeah.
It could be tough.
And, you know, the Big Ten was weird only getting four teams in.
That's all they deserved. Yeah. There are four really, really good teams, and then there is a drop-off. I'm tired of hearing Nebraska fans, please look at your resume. Yeah, you won 13 games, but look who you beat. You beat the garbage of the Big Ten. And there was a lot of garbage this year in the Big Ten. But those teams, Michigan, Purdue, Michigan State, Ohio State, I have full confidence they could do some really good things in the NCAA tournament, and you can be a part of our bracket challenge. There is some cash at stake. It's free to join. You got a chance to win some cash. If you'd like to take part in our WSBT Bracket Madness, well, you can take part by going to WSBTradio.com. You'll compete against myself, Sean Stiers, John Hoffman, and more. So have some fun with our bracket challenge at WSBTradio.com. Well, we're talking about Notre Dame missing the NCAA tournament. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you on this Monday evening opening segment. We just laid out some of the possibilities why the committee picked Syracuse over the Fighting Irish. Let's allow the head coach of the Fighting Irish, Mike Bray, to offer a couple of his thoughts. First, here was Mike's opening statement to the media last night. His impressions of his team missing the NCAA tournament.
Given where we were in January and early February, I'm heartbroken, and it wasn't unexpected. Once I saw Davidson win today, I was very realistic what could be coming. And our guys, after a season of gut punches, that was again another gut punch today. But I have prepared them for the NIT the last month. We were very realistic about how this could go, given where we were in our resume and the whole bit. And so, you know, kids are amazingly resilient. So we'll prepare with all these new rules, which will be funky, for Hampton on Tuesday. But I'm kind of proud of them and hurting for them at the same time.
And I can understand that. So many ups and downs. Just as media members or U.S. fans, I think we all rode the roller coaster ride of Mike Bray's comments after games. The low of that Miami game, and then there were some moments where you had hope, and he'd say, hey, baby, put us in Dayton. That's all we want. We'll go to Dayton and play. There's just a lot of amazing emotional moments throughout this last part of the season, including rallying to beat Virginia Tech. I mean, they were done in the second half, and they fought back. They got the win, and all the committee bracketologists, I should say, kind of felt like, well, if they win two, they're in. And see, again, Eric, it just seemed like the target moved a lot in this whole process. They went from being in after two wins to needing to play well against Duke, and, well, they had their moments against Duke, but at the end of the day, they didn't get in.
Well, some of the moving target was the upsets in other conferences, wouldn't you say? The Nevada.
Well, let me say this, Eric.
Nevada and Rhode Island losing.
All the bracketologists didn't have Notre Dame in the field at any point, even after they won two. Now, the committee looked at it different. They had them in Sunday morning. Right. But it just felt like the target was moving on what Notre Dame needed to do. Because remember, you heard the same thing. If they win two, they're probably in. Well, they won two, and I guess they would have been in, but it was never solidly in. All right, so here is Mike Bray talking about, and I believe Tom Noy from the Tribune asked this question, can you give us an explanation why Syracuse got in over his Irish?
I know. I mean, I don't want to get into comparing. I mean, I know we beat them on their floor. I guess they had a better strength of schedule, and that got them in. But I don't have the energy to kind of us, them, up, down. It's almost kind of a fitting. It's almost kind of a fitting end to kind of how our season went. You know, I was going to say we've had all kinds of heartbreaking things happen, and on the most important day, it was a heartbreaking day.
Well, no question about that. Heartbreak Hotel for the Fighting Irish, and here's Mike Bray on: will his players engage in participating in that three initial tournament that starts tomorrow against Hampton at 9 o'clock here on WSBT Radio? Very interesting answer from Coach Bray.
Ask them. It's on them.
How do you do it? How do you get them to say?
No, I'm not. You know what? It ain't me getting them. It's them getting them now. It's our senior class.
So you're not certain that they're going to buy in?
You need to ask them when they come out. Find out and then call me tonight and tell me how they feel. You know? We're going to have fun with the NIT. You know the character of these guys. I'm sure by tomorrow at noon or by tomorrow at 2 when we practice, they'll be ready to roll. But, you know, they lifted a little bit after the selection show, and they were in a little bit of a funk, to say the least. But, I told them, I said, it's spring break. I don't have anything better to do. You guys have anything better to do? Let's play. Let's see if we can get back to New York.
And they might be able to come up with a couple things.
Yeah, Florida.
About what time?
I was thinking about Miami, too.
So Mike's putting it on the players. It's on them to prepare themselves to play in this tournament. Do you like that philosophy?
Sure, why not? With the leadership that you have with those seniors, I think that's where it's got to come from. If he's got to drum up interest in, am I allowed to say NIT? Did I just say
it? You know how I feel about this tournament, so I just have a hard time.
Okay, so it's your role, not the FCC.
Well, let me say why. Because I have so much respect and praise for what the senior class has done in their career. Elite Eights, ACC Championship. And I've talked about this several times. I talked to Zach Hillsland on the air about this on Friday. I want the players to do what they think is best in Mike. So it doesn't matter what I say. Just as a fan or as a media member that has covered this group, I have a hard time watching them end their careers in this tournament. Even if you win it, do fans want to hang that banner from the rafters of Purcell Pavilion? There's just a part of me that says they deserve better. And the committee almost gave them an opportunity to end where they should in the tournament. It did not work out. I just have too much respect for what this group has accomplished. I just hate to see them participate in this tournament. And Zach Hillsland said on the show Friday that he has wiped out his NIT experience. Eric, that was his final games, just like these guys are going to go through. He goes, he's wiped it out. He doesn't even think about it, that was the end of his career. So that's why I just don't like talking about this tournament. I just am not a fan. There's just nothing. Is the College Bowl season the NIT? Like some of these bowl games, is that an NIT? I don't feel that's the same thing. Maybe it is, but no other sport has this, and it just, it's hard for me to swallow when my team or teams I cover go into this. It's just,
well,
it's hard to get excited about it.
It is hard to get excited about it.
Especially with this group, Eric. They've done so many great things.
But I think they're into it, and I think it gives Bonzi a chance to play. Yeah, we'll see. It gives Bonzi a chance to play more games with his teammates.
I agree with that.
After coming back.
Like I said, it doesn't matter what I think. That's how much respect I have for this group. I hate that this is the way they'll go out.
Yeah. And the NIT has changed over time. I'll tell you, one of the best games that I ever covered was an NIT game. And it was in the 1984-85 season when Indiana and Marquette played each other. And both of them were kind of sliding off the college basketball map. Two really proud programs. And it jump-started Indiana. 2 years later, they won the national championship.
Do you think it really jump-started them?
No. But, I mean, it was how hard those kids fought. It was a double overtime game. It was Rick Majerus versus Bob Knight. That was a great coaching matchup.
Yeah.
Kerry Trotter got fouled out in the second overtime, was so mad he cleared off the entire scores table of its papers. Rick Majerus came into the post game, crushed a pop can that I still think had some pop in it, and said, "Any questions?" And it was awesome. And also the Marquette fans were going crazy. They came to Assembly Hall and they were chanting, "Throw a chair, Bobby, throw a chair." And this was the year he threw the chair. So they were really bold. I mean, it was two really proud programs, and it was one of the coolest games that I covered in college basketball. You know, I couldn't even tell you if Indiana went on to win the NIT that year. They won that
exactly
game.
Exactly.
And I don't know that, but you know, the thing is, you know, I'll tell you another really good NIT game was Pat Garrity's junior year against Michigan. It was not the Fab Five. It was the group after that with Tractor Trailer and those guys. And that was a tremendous game. And some of it was the Michigan fans that were in the arena. But so maybe individual games, not so much the tournament itself.
You're exactly right, because the one game that stands out to me that I really enjoyed from an NIT perspective, after the two programs had their feet stuck firmly in the ground and were not going to budge, when Gene Katie and Purdue came to Notre Dame to take on the Irish. Remember, they were fighting over who should get the next home game.
Right.
And we actually have an old soundbite from that we'll have to bring out tomorrow, possibly. But it was really cool to have Coach Katie and Purdue finally back at Notre Dame. So that stood out. I know we were very close with Larry Clisby then, and we brought him some gifts when he came to town. So, you know, that was fun because the Purdue-Notre Dame game was overdue, and it took the NIT to bring them together. Other than that, I don't really remember. I think Coach Gillespie of Kentucky, his last game was against Notre Dame, but
yeah, I don't know about the games in the Garden, but some of those games where you're kind of forced to play each other and stuff, it was very, very cool. But I can understand. Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to play. I mean, I wouldn't be all. And there's worse ones. There's like the CBI. I mean, there's worse than the NIT. That's not the bottom of the barrel when it comes to those off-brand tournaments.
My good friend who calls the Fort Wayne Tin Cap baseball games also is a part of the Mastodons broadcast over in Fort Wayne, and they're playing, I think, Central Michigan in like the CBI or the CIT, whichever, another one of those three initial tournaments. But, Eric, let me just stress this again. If those players want to play together, I am thrilled. If the coaches, I'm thrilled. My opinion doesn't matter. I'm just pointing out why I'm just so hesitant, because I just remember these guys doing so many great things, and I just feel it's just a shame they have to end this way. And that's why I feel that way.
I agree. It would have been really cool to see them play in Dayton and see what happened.
Give them a chance. Yeah. I don't see what Syracuse has really done to earn that chance, but...
Yeah, there are other teams on Notre Dame's side of the bubble that I would have been able to build a better case for than Syracuse.
We'll take a timeout. My five question of the day next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here is today's question. Eric is basically being put in charge of selecting the teams to go into the NCAA basketball tournament.
I'm doing it alphabetically.
The five most important parts of a tournament resume that you would use to decide which teams get in. We'll start with number five.
Well, I'm going to start with the last 10 to 15 games. I do think how you're playing at the end of the year is important. You have to do it on relative. If you're playing nobodies, then you better have a really good record. And if you're playing really tough teams, that goes in too. But last 10 to 15 games matters.
Number four.
Quality wins and quality losses. I want to see quality wins, but I think if you play a team competitively like Middle Tennessee State with their non-conference, I think that counts for something.
Going through the five most important parts of a tournament resume that Eric would use to decide which teams made the tournament. Number three.
Road neutral games. I don't want to see a team that didn't leave their state, their whole non-conference schedule. I want to see how you did in road and neutral games, because I think that's going to tell a lot about how you'll play in the tournament.
Irish went 9-9 in that category. Number two.
Overall and conference record. I think that in the USC and Arizona State, I realize there's unbalanced schedules, but 12-6 versus 8-10, that's a big discrepancy. I that's hard to overlook, and I think you have to start there and then kind of evaluate that.
And Eric, the number one element from a tournament resume that you would use to decide which teams that go to the big dance?
KenPom and Sagarin. I think
really?
That they really do a good job of evaluating teams.
Hmm.
You have to... You got to use the eyeball test, and you got to use who's been injured. But I think those are good evaluation tools, I think better than the RPI.
That is the My Five question of the day. It is 5:55, and before we head to break, I want to say congratulations to Notre Dame Hockey Sports Information Director, a lot of times my roommate on the road, Dan Colleran, and his wife, Liz, who gave birth to the newest member of the Irish Sports Information Department family today. Happy to report that James Edward Colleran was born today, 8 pounds, 4 ounces, 19 3/4 inches long. And congratulations to Liz and Dan and James. Welcome to the Fighting Irish hockey family. We could use another fan. Congratulations. Back with more.
What fan? He's a player.
That very well could be true. Let's start with fan, and we'll work our way to player. 5:55 at WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Anthony Anderson will have the latest on the NCAA women's pairings tonight. Notre Dame is expected to be a 1 or 2 seed, probably one.
7 o'clock announcement.
Right. We will have boys basketball in Michigan. Tom Noy will have a column on NIT with an info box, if I'm allowed to say those letters, and much, much more.
All right, very good. We've got Bill from Mishawaka on the line. Bill, we have about 1 minute before we go to CBS Sports. What's on your mind this evening?
Okay, if Notre Dame gets an NIT, take it! Gee whiz! Get in a tournament, you know you can win. Good night. Give those seniors a one last hurrah. I'm sorry they didn't make the big dance, but take it. Okay. And I remember IU won the NIT in 85, like you mentioned earlier, and won the tournament 2 years later. And there's an article in the South Bend Tribune saying that that NIT championship propelled them to the national championship 2 years later. So there you can go. Agree or disagree with that thought, but there you go.
Very good. All right. So, Eric, there you go. They did win the NIT that year. Bill, thanks for the phone call, and I totally understand that particular thought process. Hey, if they are in, go out and win it. That would be great for that senior class to, I guess, leave with the championship. But, you know, I just have my feelings about winning them in the NCAA tournament. That's the last way I want to remember them, but I totally understand Bill's thought. And, hey, let's see if the players go out and want to win that championship. And it all starts tomorrow night by taking on Hampton. It's a 9 o'clock tip, and again, $10, general admission, sit wherever you want. I think students get in free with an ID, so it's one of those late starts. So any support you can give this team, I'm sure they would greatly appreciate it. All right, Eric, thank you. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
All right, that's Eric Hansen. Sean Stiers will join me in just a couple of moments. We'll start next hour by bringing aboard the South Bend Tribune's Tom Noy. His thoughts on the Irish missing the NCAA tournament. It is 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds on your home for the Fighting Irish in the NIT in this week's NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. 96-1 WSBT, the sports leader. I'm Darren Pritchett. He's Sean Stiers. Tom Noy joins us in 3.5 minutes to talk about the Irish missing the NCAA tournament. Again, some of the particulars. Oklahoma, Arizona State got in very good in the first half of the season, played poorly down the stretch. They got at-large bursts, and the head-scratcher was Syracuse getting in over the Irish. Notre Dame beat them head-to-head without Farrell and Colson at the Carrier Dome. And again, some of the numbers, if you want a reason, this is the best we can come up with, and Sean, you can add and subtract or what you like and you don't like. But Quadrant 1 wins, the new term they used in the committee room this year. Syracuse had 4 of those wins, Notre Dame 2. RPI, Syracuse 45, Notre Dame 70. Non-conference strength of schedule, this probably is when you highlight the most. Syracuse 14, Notre Dame 178. And then the committee chair earlier today mentioned 3 elements that they use to try to figure out the difference between all these bubble teams. He listed strength of schedule, Syracuse 17, Notre Dame 44, record versus NCAA teams, Syracuse 5-9, Notre Dame 5-10, that's a wash. Record away from home, Syracuse 6-8, Notre Dame 9-9. Syracuse is team 68, they're playing in Dayton. Notre Dame is team 69, they're the number one seed in the NIT, and we'll play Hampton tomorrow at 9 here on WSBT Radio. So putting all that into your noggin, what do you come up with?
Kaboom! That's what I come up with. You know, what was very hard about Notre Dame's case is it required some abstract thinking in order for Notre Dame to be able to get in, because they played 15 games without Bonzi Colson, 5.5 of those without Matt Farrell. So you've got a preseason National Player of the Year candidate and Notre Dame's only all-ACC performer, who were both gone for a combined 20.5 games. And just on the surface, Notre Dame's analytics alone weren't going to be enough to put them in. But the catch was, again, the bulk of those analytics came without their two best players. So I think the committee seemed to show that they were pretty stuck on the numbers, and it didn't matter that the big numbers that I think a lot of Notre Dame fans thought were important were the 15 that Bonzi Colson was gone and the other 5.5 that Matt Farrell was out, because 83% of their conference games they were without Bonzi Colson. Yeah. That's a lot of games, and you have to think that he was going to make a difference one way or another. And it's not just that he was gone, it's now he's back, and they have their team at full strength, something they hadn't had since the end of December, early January. So, again, if the numbers were the most important thing, and the committee seemed to say that they were, I guess you can see why they did what they did.
And we have stressed for a couple of weeks, The Ball State and Indiana losses could be warts that they may not be able to overcome. And as I mentioned to Eric, I just wonder if they didn't play their best in Brooklyn, if that was a factor at all. Had they come out and played like they did against Virginia, could that have made a difference? I mean, right. It's now if, ands, and buts at this point.
Yep.
Let's bring in Tom Noy, Fighting Irish basketball insider for the South Bend Tribune, lead columnist. He was on the program hosting the 6 o'clock hour on Thursday, and we went through a lot of the warts and a lot of the things we were concerned about on the Notre Dame resume. Again, we weren't trying to be Debbie Downers. We were just trying to lay out all last week, if they don't make it, these might be the reasons why. And unfortunately, the couple of things kind of popped up. But Tom, let me just start with this. Knowing that there are several teams you could bring into a conversation, maybe they shouldn't be in, Oklahoma, Arizona State, Syracuse. I think Syracuse maybe has a brighter light shining on them because Notre Dame's in the same conference record, beat them head-to-head on the road without their two stars. So at the end of the day, do you feel like, all things considered, Notre Dame got a fair shake yesterday?
175% correct. How about that?
So you're okay with the way the committee handled things?
Absolutely, because, and we've said this, and I still remember being on the show with you and Eric, what, it was like 3 weeks ago, saying, at the end of the day, it's going to turn out that Notre Dame is not going to be able to do enough from a metric standpoint, from a one-loss standpoint. We don't even have to get into Ball State and Indiana, and you have to throw Georgia Tech in there, because those are three teams with an RPI of 120 or worse that Notre Dame lost to. Two of those losses came with Bonzi Colson in the lineup. So don't even get to that. Notre Dame had so many chances, and I understand what Mike Bray says when he says, good news, bad news. The bad news is you play in the ACC and you're going to have to run a gauntlet. But the good news is you got a lot of chances to build your resume for an NCAA tournament. You don't have to get all of them. You only have to get some of them. This was the year that Notre Dame did not get any of them. None of them. You didn't have to win all the power games against the ACC teams in league play, but you better beat North Carolina, Louisville, Virginia Tech, Miami. All four of those at home in your building, you got to get at least one. If you had beaten one of those, if the shot falls for T.J. Gibbs against Carolina, if they don't go into overtime against Louisville, if they show up and actually throw some effort against Virginia Tech, and then if Rex Pfluger doesn't get hurt and doesn't play and plays against Miami, one of those games, just one, and Notre Dame's in the NCAA tournament.
So outside of Wichita State, not enough wow victories, or even semi-wow victories.
There were no wow victories. They were 1-7 against ranked teams, so they beat Wichita State to start the season with a ranked win in late November, and then they didn't beat a ranked team the rest of the way. That's hard. It's hard to say they were a top 68 team without one of those wins, without something else to offset Ball State, Indiana, Georgia Tech. Those would have been manageable had you beaten any combination of North Carolina, Louisville, Virginia Tech, or Miami at home. Then the committee would have said, you know what, we can see the ball. You give them a mulligan on Ball State because they went out and they played a tougher road schedule. They went to DePaul. They went to Delaware. They had to go to Michigan State. So they made the effort to play a tougher schedule. They got hit by Ball State, but hey, look, they got it back by beating this team or that team in ACC play. They went on the road and upset whoever, Duke, maybe if they would have beaten North Carolina in Chapel Hill. You had to have something to hold on to and say they're better than Syracuse because of this. And the resume just didn't have it.
I was kind of thinking about this earlier today, Tom. I mean, when you think back to Maui, LSU beats Michigan, and then Notre Dame ends up playing LSU with such a small margin of error. How much difference might it have made if Michigan beats LSU and they play Michigan instead?
And they get that Michigan win.
You have two
good non-conference resume wins. That's what Mike Bray talks about. And us media guys, you know, us cynical media guys, when Mike Bray talks about, how fragile everything is and how if he can they can just get to 9-9, we kind of roll our eyes and say, that's just coach speak. He doesn't know what he's talking about. It was so fragile. This season was so fragile, guys, that at 3:15 on Selection Sunday, Notre Dame was in the NCAA tournament. After everything that had happened to this basketball team, you lose Colson, you lose Farrell, you lose Pfluger, you lose Harvey, you lose all these close games, you lose DePaul State. After everything that happened, they were on the board at 3:15. And by 3:30, when the A-10 championship game was over, they were off the board. It's that's how thin that margin of error is.
Didn't the committee basically just say, though, Tom, because you've got two teams in the same conference, you've got a head-to-head win, they ended up with the same record in the conference. Syracuse had more bad losses in the conference. I mean, we talk about Notre Dame not having the wins, but aren't they basically just saying that head-to-head really doesn't matter that much? It's all about all this data that we stack in front of ourselves down at the end of the season.
Well, we don't know how much it doesn't matter because we're not in the war room where the selection committee is making. Maybe head-to-head matters, and they say, all right, what did Syracuse and Notre Dame do head-to-head? Ooh, check mark Notre Dame. They won at the Carrier Dome without their two best players. Then you say, what did Syracuse do with the rest of their metric numbers? What's Syracuse RPI? What's their non-conference strength of schedule? What's their regular strength of schedule? You know, what have they done with the quadrant one wins? Syracuse had four of them. Notre Dame only had two of them. So Notre Dame may have gotten that check mark. They may have well gotten that check mark for beating Syracuse in the Carrier Dome. But then when you factor in all the other data points, all those other check marks went in Syracuse's column.
Yeah, so maybe that gets them close, but everything else goes Syracuse's way.
Talking Irish right. Hoops. Go ahead.
And the thing is it's not the fact that Syracuse basically stole that bid. It's the fact that Notre Dame was on the board and they were in. I mean, it's just it hurts a little bit more, I think, for Notre Dame because they beat Syracuse. But the fact that we even got to Selection Sunday and Notre Dame was there and they were in and they were going to the NCAA tournament, and then to have it just taken away like that, that's what's really going to hurt, and really it's going to be tough for these guys moving forward.
Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune, our guest, talking Fighting Irish basketball. I believe the first year Notre Dame went to the Elite Eight, they were a number two seed in a region, and their non-conference strength of schedule was in the 300s. And we've, I think, had that a couple of times the last few years. Tom, this year it was 178. They played some better competition in the non-conference. They went on the road and played some competition. Now, I know one newspaper pointed out Notre Dame played three bottom 100 RPI teams. Syracuse played none. Who knows how much that factors in, but it does affect that non-conference strength of schedule, Notre Dame at 178. We all know that injuries are the real reason why they did not make the tournament. Besides all the Ball State, Indiana, Georgia Tech, if they would have been healthy, they would have been in the tournament. I think we can fairly say that. With that being said, is there anything Notre Dame can learn from this process to put themselves in a better position to improve seeding or whatever the case may be next year? Or did they do everything right, just the injuries cost them?
They did everything right because you talk about the non-conference schedule. Go back to 2014-15. That non-conference schedule had to stink. It had to stink for Notre Dame to have any chance because what happened? They were coming off a 15-17 season. They took their beatings at 6-12 in the ACC. That was a fragile, we'll go back to that word, that was a fragile program at that point. Mike Bray couldn't afford to go out and schedule a heavy non-conference. He had to get this team a lot of wins against a lot of bad teams. Mm-hmm. The non-conference schedule this year was okay, maybe a little subpar, but again, there's a major reason behind that. Notre Dame, given everything they had coming back, given the fact that Bonzi Colson was the Atlantic Coast Conference preseason player of the year, they were handed the A-plus league schedule. So Mike Bray said, I can't afford to crush us in our non-league schedule because of all the power that we've got coming in the league.
I like their non-conference schedule, Tom.
Yeah, you know, it was
good enough.
It was okay.
It was okay.
DePaul wasn't as good as you maybe hoped they would have been. Delaware's RPI was like 229. You kind of hoped that maybe that would draw them up just a little bit. But after Delaware, after DePaul, after
LSU,
Michigan State, LSU,
You still had a lot of the bottom feeders rolling through Purcell Pavilion with Chicago State and St. Francis, Brooklyn. But again, there was a reason for that because Mike Bray said, we're going to have enough power games in our league to be able to get to the NCAA tournament. The problem was they weren't able to win any of those power games to really stay in the conversation like they have been every other year. Like we've gotten to in 14-15, the following year, and even last year, you've gotten to early to mid-January, and there was no question come Selection Sunday that Notre Dame was getting in. This just happened to be the year where everything that could have gone wrong with this basketball team, be it injuries, ineffectiveness, rotation guys not stepping up, it happened.
Tom, we talk about the analytics, and one that really favored Notre Dame was BPI. They had like a 34, I think. And I mean, not just with Notre Dame, but across the board, it doesn't seem like that factored in as much as maybe we thought. Wasn't it supposed to kind of be a bigger factor in selection this year?
Maybe. I mean, you never know what's going on inside that room. Like, well, there may be one guy that's a real BPI type of guy, and then another guy that says, well, I'm hanging my hat on what the quadrant one and quadrant two victories are. So it's really subjective as far as what, you know, and even what year. Like, I remember way back when this whole Selection Sunday and the proverbial bubble started, it was a factor of, well, how does a team do in its last 10 games? Now that's really not that much of a factor. So it's just something where it comes, the Sagarin ratings, that was big, now maybe not so big. So it's just... Just what's hot, what's sexy every time the March Madness selection process rolls around.
Tom, that's what's frustrating. It used to be how you finished the year was a big factor. Now it does not seem to be a factor at all. Just leave the target. Don't move the target so we understand what the committee is looking for. All right, here's my final question for you. I'm going to play a soundbite, then I'll ask my question. This was Mike Bray responding to one of your questions last night about getting the players ready for the NIT and maybe getting himself ready for the NIT. So here's the answer to Tom's question from Fighting Irish head coach Mike Bray.
Ask them. It's on them.
How do you do it? How do you get them to say?
No, I'm not. You know what? It ain't me getting them. It's them getting them now. It's our senior class.
So you're not certain that they're going to buy in?
You need to ask them when they come out. Find out and then call me tonight and tell me how they feel. You know? We're going to have fun with the NIT. You know, you know the character of these guys. I'm sure by tomorrow at noon or by tomorrow at 2 when we practice, they'll be ready to roll. But, you know, they lifted a little bit after the selection show. And they were in a little bit of a funk, to say the least. But, you know, I mean, I told them, I said, it's spring break. I don't have anything better to do. You guys have anything better to do? Let's play. Let's see if we can get back to New York. And
they might be able to come up with a couple things.
Yeah. Florida.
About what time?
I was thinking about Miami, too.
Well, Tom, I guess, do you like Mike's thinking that it is on the players? And what do you expect from the team tomorrow?
I love it. I like it. It's classic Mike Bray. And it's really... If you really think about it, it's a brilliant way to think as a college basketball coach because he's always one to say, "Let me help you. How can I help my guys? How can I help my guys navigate the ACC? How can I help my guys navigate the regular season? How can I help my guys get to the NCAA tournament? When you get to postseason, when you get to the NIT." It's not about the coach anymore. The coach can't motivate his team to play in the NIT, especially a team that's been there like Notre Dame, a team that's won 7 NCAA tournament games the last 3 years. There's nothing Mike Bray can say or do or cajole or suggest that's going to get this team ready to play. It falls all on the senior class. Like, the players have to say, you know what, guys, this sucks. But we got to still go out there and try to get to New York City. And quite honestly, I think listening to Martin Gebben and listening to Matt Farrell yesterday, I think that they had to do a heck of a lot of convincing of one another and of themselves that they really want to be in this tournament.
Yeah. Understandable.
Absolutely. Is it enough for you, Tom? We're going to see some of these rules changes in the NIT now, the experimental rules changes. You're pumped about four quarters, aren't you?
As long as we have these rule changes, are they going to play like circus music in the building tomorrow? Because it's basically going to turn into a clown show. I've got a running joke with Alan Wasilewski, the Notre Dame SID. No, we're not playing match games. It's not that. We need circus music. Dun, 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 like, we've got a running joke as to when whoever scores the first basket tomorrow, Notre Dame Sports Information Director Alan Wasilewski is going to send out a tweet that says Bonzi Colson or Rex Pfluger now has the school record for points in a quarter. Now, do we have it?
Not yet. I'm working on it.
Efforting.
I just think it's goofy. The whole thing's goofy. There you go.
Anything else you need?
Yeah. Turn it off because I can't hear a word.
All right.
There you go.
Efforting. Done.
Okay. And then now after all that, after everything that happened last night, I got to tell you a quick story.
Okay.
I get home. It's like 9:45, 10 o'clock. Mike Bray contacts me. Says, can you change something in your story?
Uh-oh.
And I said, well, you know, the paper's already gone to press, but I can change something online. What do you want me to change? I said, what do you want me to change?
I know what that this is.
That the South Bend Tribune's beat writer is an idiot. You know, you want to put that in there? So he's like, no. He said, I want this in there. I want to make this point perfectly clear. After Ernie Johnson's dramatic announcement on us.
That's right.
Next time I see him, I'm punching him in the face.
And was he serious?
And so I said, are you serious or are you joking? Because you know Mike Bray, he can be dead serious about something but still joke about it. And he said, I'm both. I'm joking and I'm serious. And I said, so that's what you want me to say? And he goes, let it rip, baby.
So, ride the hot player. Have you ever been ridden?
So it'll be interesting if Notre Dame does not get all the way through the NIT Final Four in New York and they're eliminated, if CBS/TBS calls up Mike Bray and asks him to do some studio work somewhere along the line of the NCAA tournament, because if he's in the same room as Ernie Johnson, Mike Bray has promised, quote, I'm punching him in the face for what Ernie Johnson did with the announcement saying,
wow,
we're going out in alphabetical order, and this is the what place Notre Dame's name should be. Where are we going to see it? No, Ohio State. So it was that was kind of a dig that Mike Bray didn't really appreciate.
Well, there's a heavyweight with a lot of experience punching in Charles Barkley in studio, so why not?
Just don't get Charles mad at you.
Oh, boy.
That'd be terrible.
Tom, what should we expect tomorrow on the South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com?
I have no idea. Okay. Maybe NIT stuff. I mean, I'm writing about the NIT. The NIT is a late game tomorrow night, so if you're picking up your paper on Wednesday, expecting to see a game story, we will not have it. It will be online. I'll have some sort of a notebook on Wednesday morning. But a column, what I talked about earlier, in talking with the players, I think they're trying to convince themselves.
Yeah.
That the NIT is the right way to go. I don't know if they're going to convince themselves. And even Martin Gevin said, he said, nobody in the locker room wants to go to the NIT. That's not our goal. So it's really hard to recalibrate after 6 months of saying, let's try to get to the NCAA tournament. Let's get to an Elite Eight, maybe get to a Final Four. It's really hard to say, let's go play an NIT home game in front of select dozens at Purcell Pavilion.
And that's what I expect from the players. They should have that standard.
Right.
I love that.
There's nothing wrong with that. No. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, even like you said, Zach Hilsland, people are trying to tell Zach Hilsland why Notre Dame should go to the NIT, and Zach's the first guy to say, the NIT is just awful. Like, none of the players want to remember what they did in the NIT. Jordan Cornette, when they gave him an NIT watch, 1 year, that's the gift that they get, the players get for being in the NIT. Jordan took his watch, threw it right in the garbage.
Yeah.
That's how they feel about the NIT.
Well, and I get that, but it's not going to be any easier for Oregon either. I mean, they were in the freaking Final Four last year, and here they are in the NIT.
Not easy. It's not easy for anybody that has a winning program. Not
right.
A team that hasn't been there. You know, you go back to Notre Dame's first NIT run only NIT run with Matt Doherty. It was kind of cool that they got all the way through, got back to New York City to play in the NIT final game against Wake Forest because they hadn't been to postseason. But when you've been to postseason and you've got to go play an NIT game,
amen,
man, that's a tough racket.
Tom, you're the man. Greatly appreciate the time this evening. We'll be reading the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com for an update on Ernie and Mike.
You got it, guys. Take care.
All right, take care.
See you, Tom.
Tom Noy, very gracious with his time, talking about the Irish. So he felt like Notre Dame got a fair shake in the committee's eyes just because they put themselves in some tough spots and the injuries just really too much to overcome. So
we'll jump into that with our first rapid fire question, something along those lines. We'll see what you think.
Okay, we'll do that coming up next. And again, you can join us at WSBTradio.com. We have created a WSBT Bracket Madness. It is free to enter. There's some cash prizes, and you can make your picks right now. Just go to WSBTradio.com. Scroll down the page, you'll see a big graphic in the middle of the page. It's free. You got nothing to lose.
Hey, that's right.
And you have very little competition, I see.
And
John Hoffman as part of this whole mess. We are not eligible for any prizes, so don't copy off us.
Hoffman will win.
There's no doubt in my mind.
The guy in promotions who knows nothing about sports will win, for that matter.
Yeah, whoever that guy is in our office,
that's
he
right.
is going to be probably number one on the list very, very soon. All yep. right, quick timeout, rapid fire next on 96.1 WSBT. Well, of course, we played that liner to let you know there was not a leprechaun lunch
That's right.
this Friday due to the NCAA men's basketball tournament.
It's all part of the plan.
That's exactly right. From noon to midnight, or maybe even a little longer, we'll have all the action for you Thursday and Friday on 96.1 WSBT. And, of course, Notre Dame and Hampton. That game will be tomorrow night at 9 o'clock at Purcell Pavilion. Tickets, just $10. General admission, sit wherever you want. And, of course, the game here on 96.1 WSBT.
Good seats still available.
Yep, that's right, unfortunately. All right, rapid fire.
All seriousness, I hope they do get
a
pretty good crowd. I mean, it's tough because it's spring break and the students are gone, so it's a tough time to be hosting a game like that. Anyway, but it's a good chance, if nothing else, to get out and honor that core of guys. Another chance to see them again. All right, you ready for rapid fire?
I am.
Let's do it.
See what you got.
Do you buy or sell that if Notre Dame had been at full strength all year, they would have been able to overcome those bad losses we talked about to IU and Ball State in their quest for an NCAA bid?
Yes, and just looking at the field, I could see Notre Dame's potential. They could have been a 4 seed. Arizona, Wichita State, Gonzaga, and Auburn. I think full strength, there's no reason why they could have been slotted in a place like that had they played to the expectation level that we thought. But again, they were healthy in December and had a couple of disappointing losses. But I think we all felt like they would be able to overcome those losses because they always grab some big victories in the ACC. Unfortunately, it just didn't happen this year with the injuries that took place to key players. But if they're healthy, why couldn't they have been Arizona, Wichita State, Auburn, or Gonzaga as a 4 seed?
I agree. I mean, the hairs were split and Syracuse got in. Syracuse is an 11 seed, so we've got to believe that as a starting point, as they were right now, they were going to be an 11 seed going into the tournament, and they'd be playing Arizona State in that first 4 game. So, I mean, again, at full strength. And, I mean, you talk about being able to overcome it, and that was the question. I mean, so many teams, and we're talking elite teams. Duke and Villanova both lost to St. John's this year. They overcame that. North Carolina overcame a loss to Wofford. Purdue lost to Western Kentucky. So there were a lot of really good teams that lost some games. I mean, Duke's came in January to St. John's. The rest of those, I think, were in December. But there were a lot of good teams that overcame some bad early losses and were able to move on from them. And, I mean, I think if you take the best player, and to me, this is part of the eyeball test that I don't think the committee really used. If you took the best player off of any given team, I don't care who it is, the resume is going to look a heck of a lot different. You take them away for 15 games, whether it's Joel Berry from North Carolina, Trey Young from Oklahoma, whoever it happens to be. You take that best player away, they're going to look completely different. I mean, just look at Syracuse. They built their entire resume with their best players. Tyus Battle and O'Shea Brissett, they had Battle had 21 points in that game against Notre Dame, and Brissett had 10 points and 11 rebounds at full strength, and Notre Dame still beat him without Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell. And so Syracuse had their full arsenal all year long, and that's how they built their resume. So I just think, again, you take any best player away, Syracuse is not in the NCAA tournament. They're probably not an NIT team if you take those two players away the way Notre Dame had to deal with losing Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell this year. So yeah, the answer is yes. I absolutely think Notre Dame would have overcome that. And we've seen it before. I mean, it's the loss to Monmouth just a couple of years ago. We saw them end up in the Elite Eight the road. So I absolutely think they would have. All right, what's most likely to happen tomorrow against Hampton? The Irish win by 10 or more. They win by 9 or less, or they lose the game.
I'm going to have to go with the percentages and say they're going to win by more than 10. I mean, Hampton's not anywhere close to being, I think it's fair to say, a good mid-major. They're an okay mid-major. They were a co-conference champion in the MEAC. They're heading to the Big South next year, so this is their swan song. They're 19-15. Irish are favored by, 22 points? So I don't know how anybody could take anything other than winning by more than 10, even with the thought you wonder how the team's going to react.
Yeah,
I mean,
big X factor.
I think as the game gets going, maybe the first 6-7 minutes, there might be some lack of focus, but I think the competitive nature of the team would kick in a little bit.
I would have to think so,
especially being at home, so I would have to take plus 10.
Fun fact, Hampton played both Xavier and Virginia, two number one seeds this year.
Good for them.
Yeah, I mean, but other than that, the only other NCAA tournament team they played was North Carolina Central, and that was in Saturday's MEAC championship game. So they didn't exactly play a murderer's row, but they did play two teams that turned out to be number one seeds, but they also lost those games by 34 and 36 points, and they were out-rebounded by the exact same number, interestingly enough, in each game, 46 to 32. So they struggled with a couple of really good teams this year, but I do think, I'm like you, you have to take the odds. I think this should be a double-digit win for Notre Dame tomorrow night. All right, let's shift gears a little bit. Fill in the blank on this one. DeShone Kizer getting traded to Green Bay is blank.
It's a sign the Cleveland Browns believed he was not their future. And in a weird way, going to a place like Green Bay where he can play behind Aaron Rodgers and learn from him, it almost kind of validates Brian Kelly a little bit for what he said, that DeShone Kizer needed more growing time at Notre Dame. And remember all the heat he took from across the country at that time.
Yeah.
I think in a roundabout way, there was a little validation for the head coach of the Fighting Irish with this trade.
I think it's absolutely the best thing that could have happened to Kizer's career. He goes from the situation he was in Cleveland, no veteran to start in front of him, so he got thrown into the fire way too early.
Like we said.
As you said, the validation of Kelly's comments, and he just was not ready to go. And, I mean, he had no forward career with Cleveland. He was not going to be in Cleveland's future at all. They threw him in there. They essentially used him to sort of further whatever agenda they had. I've said before, I don't think that they were invested in trying to win football games this year. So they put him in there. Now he's going to go to Green Bay, where a guy like Matt Flynn backing up Aaron Rodgers, he's going to back up a Hall of Famer now in a good system. He's going to have all the things in place. He can hold a clipboard for a couple of years. If he's called upon, he'll definitely be a lot more ready to go in Green Bay than he was in Cleveland. So I think in a roundabout way, it's the best thing that could have happened for DeShone Kizer. All right, scale of 1 to 10, what chance do you give the Phillies to make the playoffs after signing Jake Arrieta over the weekend?
Love Aaron Nola at the top of the rotation.
Yeah.
Arrieta right there, a nice number two. They've got some pieces in the rotation. Velasquez, Eichhoff. Eh. Their offense looks okay. They're moving Hoskins to left field. I'm not sure how that's going to work. They're still in a division that houses the Nationals. If the Mets pitching staff is healthy, I can't see them finishing ahead of the Mets. Atlanta is very, very young, but they have some really intriguing young players that are now playing and a couple of more that will join them this year. So I wouldn't be shocked if Atlanta's a little more competitive. And with the Brewers and the Cardinals being in the wild card hunt in the National League Central with better rosters at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And in the National League West, if you give the Dodgers the title, Colorado, Arizona will be there in the mix once again. Some believe the Giants with the addition of McCutcheon and Longoria will make them better. I'm not sure about that, but I just seem to find a lot more rosters in the National League that are better prepared to make a wild card run than the Phillies, so I'm going to give that notion a 3.
All right. We're not too far apart. I'm right at around a 4 because, the Nationals are winning the NL East, and you talked about the others. I mean, the Dodgers, the D-backs, the Rockies, they all made the playoffs in the West. The Central is going to be better this year. We know Milwaukee has beefed up. The Cardinals are going to be right in there. So the only thing that maybe works in the Phillies' favor, I mean, they've got a nice young lineup. You talked about their pitching. They've got guys like Hoskins and Tommy Joseph and some other young guys in the lineup. So maybe they're up and coming. And maybe if things don't end up, if some of those other teams you talked about don't improve, maybe that plays into their favor. But I'm still right there with you. I'm around a 4 for them for their chances to make it.
Well, the Phillies are ready for Jake because Jake just put out a tweet about 54 minutes ago, a picture of him standing in front of the Phillies private jet.
Okay.
Picking him up, bringing him, I don't know if they're still in Clearwater or not, but heading to Florida.
All right. They are still in Clearwater.
Okay.
Nice facility they've got down there. They used to hold the Big East tournament down there, and I think they might actually still hold the Big East tournament, but mm-hmm. back when Notre Dame was playing in it. Nice little spring training facility. All right, we got time for one more. You want to take a break?
Let's do it. Okay, let's keep going.
All right, ESPN swapping out Sean McDonough for Joe Tessitore on Monday Night Football. Did you hear about this?
No,
you hadn't heard that.
No.
So, do you buy or sell that as a good move for Monday Night Football?
I don't know if the average fan knows who he is yet.
That's. McDonough's still more of a name than Tessitore, for
I think,
sure.
To me, as a broadcaster, this is my impression of Tessitore. He's overdramatic, and I like broadcasters who talk to me, not at me. And I always feel like Tessitore is lecturing or talking at me, and it's just overdramatic in moments that do not
that.
Need to be that way. So I'm more of a person that likes to be talked to and not at. And so McDonough was a pretty good storyteller. He and Gruden are really good together.
Mm-hmm.
I like McDonough more in the college setting, but I thought
too.
He was okay in Monday Night Football. I think Tirico was a tough guy to follow for him.
Yeah, I mean, neither one of these guys are Tirico or Al Michaels, that's for sure. And I think from a play-by-play standpoint, I agree with the points that you made. I don't think that I think they're fairly even. I do think it's an upgrade for ESPN's college football because mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about it at the time. The bowl crews that were doing all these bowl games. I think Sean McDonough is really going to be an upgrade for college football during the bowl season and during the regular season as well. I mean, to me. If I were ESPN and I wanted to make a splash, now I have no idea what the financials are. It would be tough because Kevin Harlan is getting network money from CBS, but he's just CBS's number 4 play-by-play guy. Now he does a lot of play-by-play for NBA on TNT and he does NCAA tournament. But I mean, that to me, he is the kind of guy with the personality to be the Monday Night Football guy of all the guys out there. But and I mean, if ESPN were to hire him, he could still do the NBA on ESPN. He would He could. He would give them another potential voice for college football if they wanted, especially during the bowl season. The only downside for him would be he wouldn't be able to do NCAA tournament games, but he could still do NCAA. He could still do college basketball during the season. That would be a slam dunk for me. But
I like that.
You know, I've always liked Harlan. But again, I mean, he would be that kind of signature play-by-play guy for Monday Night Football, and he already does it on the radio right now.
Very well said. Agree with you there. Sean and Darren with you. That is Rapid Fire, 10 minutes in front of the top of the hour. And at the top of this hour, Notre Dame women's basketball will find out their road to the Final Four. They look like a number one seed heading out west. What will the matchups look like? And, of course, the first two games will be in South Bend, which could affect the NIT schedule for the second round.
Yep.
Against either Temple or Penn State for Mike Bray's team. 9 minutes in front of the top of the hour, 96.1 WSBT.
Gotta be kidding me.
That's what I get for putting my scraper in my trunk. Said I'm putting it away. Done. Did that about a week ago. Bad choice.
Mine's in my back seat. I haven't quite put it all the way back yet.
It's back in the back seat once again, unfortunately. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. 5 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Once again, the Irish in Hampton. NIT first round matchup tomorrow night at 9 o'clock here on WSBT. $10 general admission. If you'd like to watch the Irish in person at Purcell Pavilion tomorrow for students, free admission with a student ID. So a good chance to go out and watch some basketball. 9 o'clock tip at Purcell Pavilion. I believe Louisville plays the early game on television. So Notre Dame got the second half of the doubleheader on the worldwide leader. So for Mike Bray's team, a near miss getting into the NCAA tournament. As we've documented, they just missed out on the tournament. Team number 69 in a 68-team field, and this was Mike Bray's reaction to the news.
Given where we were in January and early February, I'm heartbroken, and it wasn't unexpected. Once I saw Davidson win today, I was very realistic what could be coming. And our guys, after a season of gut punches, that was again another gut punch today. But I have prepared them for the NIT the last month. We were very realistic about how this could go, given where we were in our resume and the whole bit. And so, you know, kids are amazingly resilient. So we'll prepare with all these new rules, which will be funky, for Hampton on Tuesday. But I'm kind of proud of them and hurting for them at the same time.
So as a fan, would you have rather known that Notre Dame was number 69, or would you have preferred that you had no idea they were the last team out and that they just didn't make the tournament?
I think it makes it a lot tougher knowing that they were number 69, definitely.
I agree. I want to know where my team stands.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with...
It's kind of like, would you rather get blown out or would you rather lose by a point? Oh. It's just tough, and especially knowing who the last team in was, Syracuse, and a team that you beat on the road, a place you don't normally win on the road, and you kind of wrote it off at the time like, it's a cruddy Syracuse team and blah, blah, and that's the team that got in right in front of you. That's tough.
So why did Notre Dame get ahead of Syracuse? I'm sorry, why did Notre Dame not get in? Because Syracuse was that last team in. Mike Bray wasn't willing to go there.
I know. I mean, I don't want to get into comparing. I mean, I know we beat them on their floor. I guess they had a better strength of schedule, and that got them in. But I don't have the energy to kind of us them up down. It's almost kind of a fitting end to kind of how our season went. I was going to say we've had all kinds of heartbreaking things happen, and on the most important day, it was a heartbreaking day.
Well, no question. I give Mike credit. A lot of coaches in the past have thrown fits over not making the tournament. Actually, a guy I talked to Friday, Seth Greenberg, Mr. Bubble at Virginia Tech. Every year he was on the bubble and did not get in, and a couple of times he had some explosions. Some Missouri Valley teams have had their coaches get upset. I give Mike a lot of credit. He could have went down that road, but he decided to stay neutral, and That's why we should all appreciate our coach, because he's just not the type of guy that's going to embarrass this program, his players, or himself.
Yeah, and maybe the early psych job that he was working on, because remember he mentioned it after a game, I think it was after the Miami game, maybe he mentioned, maybe the NIT isn't so bad for it. He kind of started sort of working, massaging that into their brains that maybe that's going to be out there as well. So maybe it wasn't as big a drop.
At Duke, because the Duke fans were chanting NIT, and Mike says, give me that.
Came up there, too. That's
sign
right.
Sign me up for that. And then he started talking about signing me up for Dayton. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out.
Nope.
Strange, strange year. I mean, the expectations at the start just can't take things for granted.
You know, and that's what we kind of talk coming in. He doesn't usually kind of set those sights real high coming into the season.
Out
of all years with the great players he had, that kind of stuff happened.
Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times awaiting. Grab some Buds. He's Sean. I'm Darren. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.